to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. You are at the spot, the place, the location where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. And today we are with Michaela Stone. And I'm so excited to talk to her. She's got, what, is it three books, two books? There's two books that we're going to feature.
I have three of them.
We're going to talk about human design. She's going to give us the word of the day. We're going to go into a little bit about her personality, her wisdom, and her charm. Let's welcome her to the show. How are you?
Hi, April, and thank you so much for having me here. I'm thrilled to be on your podcast. It's an honor, and I'm great.
I'm glad to have you. You've got a show of your own.
I do.
How long have you been podcasting?
Only since last May. It's pretty recent, but I've got a lot of episodes out. I do one a week, and it's live. It's TV as well as podcast, and it's on a lot of platforms.
How does that make you feel to know that you are now a trusted resource, a media source that's delivering information? You know, that's a lot of responsibility.
It's a lot of responsibility, but I don't say anything that I can't back up.
Right.
So I feel fine about that.
Yeah, me too, because there's a lot of, you see on YouTube, there's all these bloggers and it just seems like it's a place for them to vent or to dispel rumors or discredit people. But what we have to do is when people are under the sound of our voice, we have to really take that seriously. We are considered a subject matter expert. We vet our guests. We look at our content. We look at our audience. And we make sure that we're providing something that is going to be for the embetterment of humanity. Wouldn't you agree?
I would, totally. In fact, I do a lot of parenting podcast episodes as well as dispelling the untruths that the food industry spread to people. So these are two of my hot topics. And I'm always bringing new information forward when I can and explaining exactly what I mean so that people can really get the information that I'm offering them. And then I ask them to go try it.
Exactly. We're going to talk about that in just a second, but tell us how you show up in the world. A little bit about your experience and what you do and how you do it.
So a little bit about my journey here?
Just about your life experience.
Okay.
Find yourself in this space.
Well, I'm a lifelong traveler. I've been moving since I was 6 months old. Currently living in the eighth country. I've had 13 international moves, but I can't tell you how many in-country moves. I never counted them from little. So I've always been moving, and I love learning about other cultures and how things work and why, and you know, preferred foods. In fact, food is my entrance to a new culture when I move. I like to get into the food markets and start picking things up that I don't recognizing and then asking people, what do I do with this? What is it? And I will start a conversation with someone that way. It tends to be a good opening into a new country when I get there. So I've had quite a journey, but I've been studying behavior since I was a little child because I was not in a safe environment and I needed to know what the adults around me were going to do next and whether I needed to run and hide or if things were okay right now. And that stayed with me for life, but it turned into something that I became more curious about. And then really, as I got to understand it, I formalized that knowledge by training to be a board certified behavior analyst and getting the degrees that go with it. And now I have the science to back up what I was learning by experience. So I have that full rounded thing. And that kind of got me to where I am now, which is all about behavior.
Well, let's talk a little bit about human design.
Absolutely. That's another story.
You know, define that for people. A lot of people don't know what that is. You know, how do you design a human? How do you redesign? What are the key elements, components? Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So human design is an amalgamation of four ancient wisdoms, which is the Hindu Brahmin chakras, the Kabbalah from Jewish mysticism, it's Western astrology, and it's the I Ching or the Chinese Book of Wisdom. All of those things are combined with a nice sort of wrapping of quantum mechanics, seriously, waves and particles stuff. And it's a system that uses your birth data very specifically, like astrology would, to map out how you were designed. It's not a person designing you, it's how you were designed by whatever higher power you feel is there for you. So if that's God, then this is God's design. And what it does is explains to you where your energy flows in a very easy way. You know, if you're creative or if you're very structured. And typically, when I work with a person, they have a lot of conditioning. And conditioning means it's stories that people have told you, particularly when you're a child. Oh, you're no good at math. You'll never be able to do math. And you take that story on and believe it. And you might have something in your human design that gives you that thing you'd think you can't do in a really effortless way. So unlocking your human design is a key to a much happier life because you stop pushing on the wrong door and you start finding the right one for you. And because I have a science background, very much so, people will ask me, well, okay, but human design isn't scientific. And I will counter with, I call it a living science. Because I'll tell you the hypothesis, I'll tell you the things, you go test it. And if you get repeatable results, we have a winner.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's very important. I want to jump to mental health and food. There's a psychological component when people maybe overeat or, undereat or eat for emotional reasons. But what is also important, and I'm sure that you have studied this, is that the food and the preservatives, additives, fake stuff that's in our food can really affect our mental health.
Oh, it affects all of you. Yes, mental health, but it affects your physical health. It affects your outlook. In fact, someone who's doing the program I'm currently in, running, I'm coaching it, but there's a group of us coaching different groups, which is why I had a little issue with how to word that. But there is a woman who came in with pretty severe depression, and she got bodily aches, and she was just having a hard time with life. And I think 5 weeks into the program, she was reporting that her depression had gone. She couldn't believe it. And there's a system we have of taking a break from certain foods in a particular order. And the point to it is that you learn how that food feels for you. And when you bring it back, if you bring it back at some point, you'll see the difference. A client in my group.
And there's two things that I have done. One, me and my husband, we probably shouldn't have done it on our way to Las Vegas. That wasn't the plan. But we went on a no sugar for 3 days. I had the headache from him. I had no idea of the withdrawal just from sugar.
Oh, sugar's the other white powder.
It is definitely the Chinese call it the sweet poison. And I couldn't believe that. And now my body is telling me I'm not feeling sick, I'm not feeling nauseated, but I'm getting downloads. I'm getting some sensory messages inside my body to extract the meat. It is really saying to extract meat. There's so many preservatives and additives. Now, brains, I love a good steak or pork chop. I'm not gonna lie to you. But I found myself, and my husband's bad at this too, with every single meal, there has to be a meat byproduct. And that is not natural. The strongest animals in the animal kingdom are vegetarians. But we have been led to believe by marketing and promotion that this is where you can get your best source of protein is, you need to have that animal byproduct. What's your feelings on that?
Well, I think human beings are not designed by evolution or any other power to eat the same way all year. You know, with nutrition anthropology, if you look at the earlier humans, and that's where we spent a lot of our time historically. We haven't been eating the way we're eating now until the last 20 years or so. So we're not equipped to handle all the chemicals. That's the biggest issue. And then if you're eating meat that comes from a mass production place, definitely no. It's full of hormones and additives and all kinds of things that your body just does not need. Plus, did you know that the average sort of big lot, which is not organic at all, they feed their cattle on soy and corn and all kinds of things that cattle don't naturally eat. And the cow will not live longer than 6 months on that diet, but they don't care because they kill the cow before that age. But just
Wow.
think how unnatural that is. And then you're eating that. So unless you can get something that's pasture raised and organic, which I do recommend, then the stuff from the supermarket, I wouldn't touch it, and I don't touch it. My eggs also come from a local farm. I would not eat anything from the store like that. It's just, it's been so tainted, it's not edible.
Right. Okay, but in the real world, you live in these concrete jungles. Now, you live in New York and there's the bodega down there. You live in, South Central Los Angeles, that there's not fresh produce in grocery stores there. What do you recommend those people eat? We have to eat to survive.
Oh, absolutely. And there are, for the people who can manage it, there are delivery services that you can order fresh fruit and vegetables
It's
from
so
and also
expensive.
meat. Now,
And it's a
well,
double-edged sword.
there are some that will do subscriptions, and there are, if you search, you can find some that aren't terrible, especially if you're living in a place like New York, because New York already has crazy prices. But I live in a rural area, and we only have two stores that sell food. So we bring in organic meat and so on from a delivery service, and it's frozen, and but it's fine. It's better than buying something that's chemically laden. If you can't afford it, then my suggestion is to do what you can with what's there. So you go for products that have minimum number of ingredients in. Ideally, you can pronounce them all, and go for that. Go for the thing that's got the least processing with it. But if it comes out of a box, chances are that's not an ideal option because it's been processed to pieces.
Exactly. It's not even real mashed potatoes or macaroni and cheese.
Right.
And eat at home. Eat at home. I had a craving. I'm not going to name the place, the fast food restaurant. For me and my husband, it was $33 for
Wow.
fast food. $33. That's what I said too. And it wasn't even good. But again, some lessons in life you have to pay for. And that was a bought lesson. I won't do that again. Shopping the outer perimeter of the grocery store is my favorite thing. It makes me creative. Going in, looking at the recipes, thinking about some of the things that I really like, and Googling it and seeing how I can reproduce that at home. Leftovers. I've got cousins that will not touch a leftover. I don't know. I love leftovers because now it seems like the seasonings have just really kind of gotten into the food. But also with children, it's a challenge. To get them to even try something, they look at it. No, I don't want it. I don't want to do that. And we don't want to be like that person. Well, you can't get up from the table until you clean your plate. You don't want to torture them. What is a way to encourage children to try different options, try different foods? I say take them in the kitchen with us and teach them how to grow their fresh vegetables, and they get excited about what they can produce with it. What are some of your suggestions, Michaela?
I love that suggestion. I think that's great. And what I did with my kids was gave them lots of options that were very colorful and crunchy and juicy. And maybe they could dip it in something, but usually they didn't want to. I found sliced up yellow peppers, for example, became a great snack. They really liked it and easy to carry with you and so on. It's all about what you offer them in the first place. If you have a selection of sort of Pop-Tarts and cereals and stuff, then their selection is high sugar, and that's going to cause an addiction. It's going to cause them seeking more of that. So if you're on that pathway, you need some help to get off that pathway. And I don't recommend doing the 3-day sugar detox that you did precisely because of what you said. You
It
feel
was horrible.
terrible.
It was
But
horrible.
if you're going to come off sugar, one of the things I would recommend there for child or adult is start putting the fruit in there. Eat lots of fruit first and then take the refined sugar out, and your body will be ready to deal with it. You won't have the big sort of meltdowns or headaches or problems that come with it. So a child trying to deal with school and headaches and sugar cravings is not in a good place. So you don't want to do that to them.
And even for us adults, check your elimination. Look back in the stool and see what's happening there. The smell. There are people that use the bathroom and you can smell it all in through the house. That's a key indication that there's something rotting inside of your body. It's not supposed to smell like that. Your urination, is it stinging? Is it burning? Is it strong? What color is it? Those type of things tell you from the onset what is going on with your digestion and what's coming out. So if that's coming out already icky and messed up, imagine what you've left in there that has been filtered. We have to take all this into consideration, but the brain fog, the distraction, the menopausal. I was talking to another one of my guests when I was going through the menopause. Thankfully, I'm on the other side of it. The best thing I did for myself was to keep a food journal. I would look at what it was that I'd eat, and I noticed that it was lemonade. You go to the lemonade dispenser, I don't know what in that syrup or whatever, but within 15 or 20 minutes after drinking a big gulp, I would go from a flicker to a flame. It would be horrible. Caffeine was not my friend. Sugar was not my friend. Certain, again, meat was not my friend. That was me personally. But I was able to look at it, see what the effects were when I took it out of my diet and when I put it back in my diet. And it helped me so much. It really did.
Yeah, it's the only way to know really how the food is operating on you is to take it out for a while. And when you have an issue with taking it out, like there will be people who grab their coffee cups and say, "Oh no, you're not having my caffeine. You know, I can't do anything without caffeine." Well, okay, that's a great place to start looking at why are you so dependent on that? And are you really? Like, how do you show up if you don't have the caffeine? You need to put it down for a while so that you can learn that. And yeah, there'll be a few rough days because that too is an addiction, right? So you will go through a thing, but know that you'll come out the other side. And if you keep yourself well hydrated with a whole lot of water, then you know that will help as well. But
You know
you
what
can
I found
only
with the
learn,
water?
right?
Okay, this is what I found with the water. I found that the water kept me bloated.
Oh, interesting.
I would drink a lot of water, I would eliminate, but I would be bloated. And I mean, I can kill some water. I have no problem. I love it. I put a little bit of lemon in it. So now what I do is I go by the recommended amount, maybe a little bit over, and it's okay. But the belly was like, and I was like, but it's only water. But again, the kidneys have to filter it. You've got to be able to, it's got to go through the whole body, and then you have to eliminate that. So it was interesting for me too. So I had to watch, the water content. So let's ask you some fun questions. Let's talk about your books. Tell us a little bit about your books, the inspiration for your books, and what are inside the pages of those great books.
Okay, well, thank you for asking. I have this book, which is Light from the Shadows, and it's a multi-author book. And these are the podcast hosts, and we're all telling our story of, you know, our sort of journey, if you will, and then the transformation that happened and what we're bringing into the world now. So that's a multi-author book, and it's kind of fun to read. You know, you could get it on Kindle and just have a nice, cozy read. It's not a heavy read, so you're not going to have to work at it. And
Okay.
then if you want something a little more meaty, there is this one, which is Our Forgotten Children. And this is a multi-author book and it's a project. There are 15 authors. I'm the first one in the book, and I'm talking about behavior patterns and really how to read your child's behavior and understand your part in it. Because once you get that down, a lot of the behaviors that are problematic will go away because behavior is communication. So if your child can't articulate their problem, they will behave it to you. And so if you have big behaviors going on, there's a big problem. And you need to learn how to decipher that for yourself so you know how to show up and not sort of be a cause of those problems. And that's something that parents don't intuitively know. And then each author is also naming a charity, and all the proceeds go to the charities. So,
Oh, that's beautiful. That is
yeah.
absolutely beautiful. So, what was your inspiration for writing your contribution? I mean, you have a lot of skill sets, you have a lot of experience. And again, as you were sharing with me, that between you and your husband is a blended family of five children. So there's a lot of experience there that you have, went through firsthand that you've acknowledged. And each child is so individual.
And that was a big part of why I started doing what I'm doing and why I did my contribution there. Because each child is individual. And when you pick up a typical parenting book, it's for the child in the middle of the bell curve. It's a child that doesn't actually exist. And it's very, they tend to be written in a very sort of, if you do this, that will happen. And that's not true. Every child will respond differently. So what I work from is, how can the parent read the situation from their perspective and their child's, and then choose a path that's going to be beneficial for both of them? It's a very flexible approach, and it's also got nothing to do with how you were raised, what your parents are telling you, what the neighbor's telling you. You know, the world and his dog will give you a whole lot of parenting advice, but they don't really have the skills to be giving you that advice. And what your parents were doing, whether you loved it, hated it, or a little of each, is immaterial. That was a bygone age. We are not the same humans that are coming out now. These kids are very different. They are wired to the
They
internet.
are wired
Yeah.
way differently.
And they're also eating a lot of ultra-processed foods, which alters the chemistry of the brain. So we have a very different species now. You have to parent these kids differently. What our parents did and their parents did doesn't work for this generation, quite simply.
But it's so hard to engage. They separate themselves. I mean, my daughter was in the den and she texts me. I came up out of the ground on her. Get up and walk and talk to me. We're here at the restaurant. I want to communicate. Phones down. You have to encourage that because if you don't, you're going to lose them. You're going to lose them. And the art of communication is, and it's not just verbal communication, it's body language, it's touch, it's eye contact, it's, reading emotions. Like you said, you have to figure out what is going on with these big behaviors because these kids go to school and bullying is an on, seems like it's one of the sports that they offer at school.
Right.
They have no outlet. They don't know how to express themselves. They've taken art and music out of the school. So there's no way for them to articulate creatively like they used to. So as parents, we do have our work cut out for us. I'm glad that mine is all grown. I don't have any little ones anymore because it's a whole different thing. I mean, they're non-binary. They don't even want to be a male or female. They just want to be.
There's a lot.
It's
There's a lot going on, and I too am glad that my kids are grown now. The challenges are always there. They just shift through the generations, and the challenges that the current generation, or Gen Alpha, the new kids that are coming up, they're all stuck on iPhones. They freak if they put them down. They'll get violent. Like, there's a lot of problems there. And the thing is, the parents busy, the parents overwhelmed. We have a lot going on this planet right now, and a lot of it affects us directly. And all of that is very stressful. So the parent will take the easiest tool and use it. And that easiest tool is electronics. Here, child, have this, and be quiet,
And
be occupied.
they're in the grocery store. Engage your child in picking the fruits or what is there something here? Let's see all these pretty colors. Let's pick something different. Let's try that. That's what happened with my mother as she aged and transitioned. She lost her sense of smell and taste.
Oh.
It was horrible. But what I would do is much like you, I would make it more colorful. I would make her pancakes with a little face on them. I would give her different textures. I would, and that would spark and engage her more in the food because she was just stuffing herself, trying to get that taste, trying to, fulfill a need. She knew she had to eat, but it wasn't satisfying for her. And it was hard. But back to the children, now a lot of millennials don't even want to have children. Have you noticed that?
I've definitely noticed that, and I can really see why, because we're in a world that's got an economy that's in a mess. The school system is failing, and I don't blame teachers for that at all, but you've got a lot of political interference, banning books and so on, and then you've got teachers who are not paid very much, and then they're expected to buy materials as well. That's
Yeah,
bizarre. In eight countries, I've never seen that before.
but they're also required now to be the mass monitor. You know, you got to make sure that your child is this, or you know, you're seeing a lot of disruption. The child coming to school disheveled or hasn't eaten. Now you're mandated to report. It's teachers didn't sign up for that.
Right, and nor should they have to. And then the other thing they shouldn't have to sign up for are all the shooter drills that they get to do in schools. Like, you don't need to go to work or to go to school as a child and be worried that it might be your last day. Like, that is the most tragic situation. And if think of all the stress hormones that those children have and the teachers every day when they're worried about going to school. And there's a lot of kids that are old enough and aware enough that they are worried. They know it's a very real thing. And when you do a shooter drill, even the kids that weren't aware before, now they're aware. And I saw one instance of a shooter drill where there was a girl in a wheelchair and they didn't have a plan for her. So when everybody disappeared into their cupboards and what have you, she was left in her wheelchair in the middle of the classroom. Can you
Wow.
imagine how traumatized that kid is? Because even though it was a drill, she was not seen, she was not heard, she was not valued in that moment. And the teacher shouldn't have to be dealing with all of this in the first place, but this is the reality we have now. And yet every time there's a shooting, certain people will trot out the thoughts and prayers thing, and it's just a rote statement. It means nothing. They don't mean it, and they don't want to make any changes. And if they don't want to make any changes, then their thoughts and prayers are pretty useless.
Absolutely.
And we have traumatized kids.
And there's so many countries that, you know, I had one of my guests on the show. She was a Bobby, in London. She worked 30 years, never carried a gun.
Right.
Never carried a gun. And she said she didn't want to use her baton very much either. Never
Right.
carried a gun. And there's, you know, there's mass shootings there, not as much as here in the United States, but people are being cut or whatever the situation is. But they did not have to resort to such extreme violence. And now it's like, okay, shoot first, speak later. But you have to take into consideration the work that individuals are doing. So you are doing a lot of heavy lifting with parents, with nutrition, writing books. How did you formulate your podcast? How did you find your niche, what you want to talk about, and how you want to deliver that to the world?
Well, my podcast is called Navigating Complicated Relationships because there are so many complicated relationships. My very first episode was the relationship you have with yourself. And then I went on to boundaries and, you know, all kinds of areas that people have difficulty with, particularly Generation X individuals. They were not taught boundaries, so they don't know boundaries. And that is a problem because if you don't have a boundary, then other people don't know not to walk all over you. So that's an issue. And basically, I went for things that could be behavioral or came into my sort of blend of, you know, between the 4 degrees and all the certificates, I had the information in there. So I'm also a certified nutrition coach. So I have that in there as well. And I cover emotional eating. There's a variety of topics. And 1 week I did narcissism. And what does it mean to be a narcissist for the person who is a narcissist from their perspective, as well as how unlikely are they to become other than a narcissist? Because it's very, very difficult for that person. There's some significant childhood trauma there that has made that person enclose themselves into a shell, and they basically repel all comers. They take responsibility for nothing, especially when it's theirs. And they literally will manipulate the world around them to suit them because they've become detached from other people in that way. And emotionally, they're not going to be engaged with you. They'll manipulate, but they won't be engaged. And this is their traumatic childhood, and they're stuck in that. They didn't grow up. So they're in that place. Now, if you're living with somebody like that, It's appalling, but the narcissist is unlikely to seek treatment because they're in there for safety. They're in a bunker. They're not coming out of their bunker
Right,
voluntarily.
right,
So
right.
it's a tough subject.
It is a tough subject, and don't add that to the person that's self-medicating. I had a brother that was a narcissist, but he was an alcoholic, and I tell you, I don't know how he could even look himself in the mirror. It was really, really difficult, and I see, as you say, and many others have laid out to me, is that they are in this cocoon, and they feel safe there. This is their protection, Everybody else is against me or judging me, but that's what they were subjected to from the onset. So just being in this bubble, but the hurting part of it is that when they direct that towards other individuals, the wife, the children, and it goes from one extreme to the next, then it creates epigenetic generational trauma for the next generation. It's just a snowball effect. What do you say to a person that is living with a narcissist right now?
First of all, I would ask them to examine whether they need to be living with a narcissist because the relationship isn't going to improve. It's highly unlikely to improve. So, do you need to be there? And if you do, then you're going to need to armor yourself a little against the gaslighting and the manipulations that are going to happen, the hot and cold, all of those things. But in most instances, honestly, I would ask you to seriously consider, are you in a safe place right now? Do you really want to be in that relationship right now? Because if you're staying for the children, for example, which is what people often say, what are you teaching your children?
Right.
You might want to get them
What are you
out of there.
staying for? Yeah, what are you staying for? More chaos, more destruction, more pain? What's
Right.
the bright side?
Yeah, and it's very tough because the love is all on your side, and the narcissist isn't really able to let you in. So without judging the person who is a narcissist, they are stuck in a bad place, and there's nothing you can do to pull them out. There is no amount of effort on your part that will make a dent in that. Because it is a very serious protection. It's like taking a hammer and chisel to a 2 foot thick walled bunker and expecting to get through it. It's not going to happen.
Wow.
And they're not going to seek treatment because they don't want to be out in the world and they don't want to recognize that they have responsibility because they just can't handle it. They're too fragile. The narcissist is actually really, really fragile. And the only way that they can really cope with the world is to manipulate it and pull on people's strings and make other people do things so that they are left alone in the middle of all the noise. It really is a sort of safety technique on their part. And it's not one that we have found a way into. There are therapists that will work with a narcissist, but you got to get them in the chair first.
Right. And they don't think that there's a problem, so there's no need to get in the chair.
Right. Well, they don't have, well, they have a problem, but they don't have a problem. They recognize everybody else has a problem.
Right, it's everybody else's problem. So
Yeah.
let's ask some fun facts about you because we've done a lot of the heavy lifting.
Right.
If you could time travel, where would you travel to?
Ooh, so you're assuming backwards, right?
No, anywhere. You can go forward. You can time travel.
Oh. Actually, yeah, that's a tough one. Where would I go to if I was time traveling? I think I would like to go forward so that I could have a look at where we're going with all of this and
Right.
then make my
I'd like
plans.
to go forward too.
People will often ask you the question, what would you tell your 18-year-old self? And I'm kind of thinking, well, I'll go forward so I can tell my current self something.
Exactly. And I'm going to ask you that question next. What would you tell your 25-year-old self?
I would tell my 25-year-old self to just pace a little and absolutely do that travel and have fun. Don't take life so seriously because we only have it for a while.
Exactly. And to enjoy it. If you were an appliance in the kitchen, what appliance would you be?
I was an appliance. I'd probably be a blender.
I get so many blenders. I tell people that or the Vitamix.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they love to do that. I think that I'd be the refrigerator.
Okay.
I just want to chill.
I like that.
If you were an animal, what animal would you be?
Well, I love dogs, but can we have dragons? If I can be a dragon, I'll be a dragon.
Why would you like to be a dragon?
I have loved dragons since I was a child. My room, you can't see it really from there, but I have dragons all around me. It's just, I find them to be a very protective image and a very comforting, sheltering kind of image. So, as a child that wasn't safe, I really love that sort of shelter.
Well, I went on a guided meditation with a woman from Australia, and she took me on a journey on the back of a dragon. And Michaela, let me tell you, it was out of sight. I just really couldn't believe it. And when I came back or snapped back, I just felt like I had been transformed. But it was really amazing to go on a guided meditation with the dragon. So check out the dragon's brains, they're pretty good.
Oh, I would be there in a heartbeat to do that meditation. Absolutely.
Well,
Yeah, I always tell people.
yeah, it's online. I'll send it to you. It was
Thank you.
really deep.
I always tell people, don't slay your dragons, make them your friends.
Exactly. And again, this is the Chinese New Year. This is the year of the dragon.
Yeah.
There is a lot, and there's a lot of history there. I believe that they were actual animals. Do you believe that they were actual? Well, in a life type form, or do you think that they were mystical and just?
I think they are probably dinosaurs, but yeah, I don't see why they wouldn't have existed.
Do you believe in reincarnation?
Yes, with the but. So, yes to reincarnation. I believe that you have a whole purpose of things that you are here to learn, and what you don't learn, you'll come back and learn again. But I believe we have some say in how that looks. So your soul is going to choose a certain place to be to get certain lessons. Now, it doesn't always work according to plan, is my thought there, because, children, a soul isn't going to choose to be in an abused situation, for example, or in a place where violence is happening. They're not going to choose that experience. So sometimes the parents forget the agreement. They forget what they were going to do by the time the child arrives. It's a long story to explain it all, but I think yes, we do come back, but there's a point to it.
I think that we come back in different forms, but we all have a soul contract, and we have to fulfill that. And I think that that's one lesson that people need to adhere to. It's going to be hard to agree to because you have different religious doctrines, you have different spiritual beliefs, just day-to-day existence. But if we understand that we are here for two purposes, one is to learn and one is to teach. All this other stuff is superficial. The table, even the air that we breathe is transforming every day. The food that we eat is transforming every day. Our minds have to also pick up and transform with that as well. And you have been such a great interview. I appreciate you so much. Tell my brains how to get a copy of your book and how to tune into your podcast and to follow you, like you, love you, and share you with others.
Okay, so I'll go with the book first. Our Forgotten Children or Light from the Shadows can be found on Amazon, and I have an author page there as well. So if you want to follow what I'm doing, that's one place you can do it. Emailing me at mickey@gaffinstone.com, and I'll spell that. It's MIKKI, because I'm not a mouse, at Gaffin, GAFFEN, Stone, STONE. com. That's my email, and I'm very responsive. I'm easy to find on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. Just look up Michaela Gaffin Stone and you'll find me. There's only one. And what was any other question?
Yeah, just I wanted people to be able to connect with you.
Okay.
Is there any current offerings? Are you coaching? Are you running any programs?
Yes, absolutely. I have a couple of things I'd like to put out there right now. One is, this is actually the last month that I'm going to be sort of intentionally offering human design. After that, it's going to go onto the back burner. It'll still be something I do, but I'm not focusing on it after March. So if you want human design, now is a great time to jump in. And I do two readings that are 90 minutes each, in depth, and you get the recordings and everything, so you keep it. That's usually $500. But if somebody contacts me and says that they heard me on your podcast, then I will give them a $200 discount, which is pretty huge.
Wow, that's huge.
Right? And just for the month of March. So that's one offering. And then the other one is to talk to me about the 90-day food freedom program that I mentioned earlier, because I'll be running another one in May, but I'm taking people on a wait list now, and I'll be giving them information sort of as it comes in all the way to May. So you're not just sitting on a wait list forgotten, but you're actually going to be getting something for that. And that's going to be an incredible program where you have access to WildFit. And if you want to look up getwildfit.com, you'll learn a lot about it. And then I coach you in a small group so that you have maximum support, and you cannot fall off any wagon. There are no wagons. This is a place where you're going to learn a whole lot, you're going to experience a whole lot, and come out so much stronger.
Well, brains, that's what we need. We need strength. And we start with our diet, and that's the diet of our mind. Don't call it a diet, call it a live it. Change your vernacular. Get excited about it. Take your kids in the kitchen with you. Take them to the grocery store. Take the device down and let them feel the melons. Let them smell the apples. You know, enjoy it. Take a walk outside in nature. Be kind to people. You know, rethink things before you open your mouth. Say, oops, wait a minute. What if I had a different approach? Maybe I'd have a different outcome. And that's what we want. We want the very best for each and every one of you. Okay, like you have just been so wonderful and gracious. And brains, I'm telling you, listen to her podcast. You will like it. Oh, before we conclude, can you tell my brains a little bit about the word? What is it? And
Agnotology.
agnotology. Brains, I was looking at one of her interviews and she went in depth about this word, and I'm going to have to figure out how to use it in a sentence more than once. Can you tell them a little bit about that before we conclude?
Absolutely, I'd love to. Agnotology is as it's a science, it's a study within the area of sociology, I believe. I think that's where it's categorized. And it basically means the way that people intentionally mislead others for their financial gain or for their power gain. So that can be it's misinformation, it's sowing seeds of doubt about real information so that you question what's real. And you know, there are many examples about that that I give in my podcast, but it's basically misleading you so that they can manipulate you and get money out of you. And it's a thing. I can take my tin hat off, and I don't have to say that food companies are lying to you when they say this is healthy, this is good for you, when actually they've stuffed a ton of sugar in it. They just took some fat out and made it less healthy, in fact. You know, I'm thinking yogurt in this case. That's one example, but that is actually an outright lie, and that comes under agnotology. It's such a fascinating thing, and it's all around us. Misinformation, sowing seeds of doubt, manipulation. And my podcast, I should mention, is Navigating Complicated Relationships, and it's on the inspiredchoicesnetwork.com. So if you look it up there, you will find many episodes. Today's was agnotology, and it was a little bit, I was pushing some buttons there, and that was
No, I
intentional.
loved it. As I said, I was engaged. I was definitely engaged. And that's why I encourage you, open up your mind to different options, different choices, different voices. That's the only way that you learn. Other than that, you'll be a mechanical animal. Go along to get along. That's not using your brain. Thank you so much for being here on the edge. We love you deeply and completely. Go back and listen to other edgy conversations. Like, love, share, and subscribe to both of us. Like, love, share, and subscribe. Thank you, Mickey. You're the best.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye, brains.